And welcome to Nerdstalker. I am Adolfo Ferranda at Nerdstalker on Twitter, nerdstalker.com, and all the places on YouTube and everywhere else. Give us a thumbs up and subscribe if you could, please. Very special guest today on the show. We have Dr. Deirdre B. Mendez, who is an intercultural consultant, speaker, and author who helps U.S. companies and their international partners resolve culture-based problems. A former business consultant, Deirdre is now Associate Director for Cultural Programs at the Macomb School of Business. Her book, The Culture Solution, facilitates self-guided problem solving for international business people. And so we'd like to welcome Deirdre to the show. So Deirdre, what we like to do is provide immediate value for the viewers and listeners of the show here. So if this is a wonderful topic, I was really looking forward to talking to you because we love this whole segment and all our business users and everyone else here. It's a huge topic. So can you first start off with what's the importance of cultural differences in business?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here. The importance of cultural difference in business is huge, actually. Studies are showing that as many as 50% of international mergers and acquisitions fail. Some studies show higher than that. And there are problems for outsourcing programs. And anyone who's done international business knows that cultural problems can lead to miscommunication and misunderstanding, if not outright conflict.
Well, so what we see now in business is a big move towards diversity and inclusion and that type of thing, regardless of the current administration. I'm seeing a lot of different businesses, tech and financial, that are moving into this direction, more so it seems like than what was initially sort of a thing to do or not a thing to do. Are you seeing this trend as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think diversity and inclusion is an issue that's become increasingly important. The work that I've done, the book that I've written actually focuses on international difference, but of course there's tremendous cultural difference in right. any workplace, not only between ethnic groups and genders and so on, but also between the accounting department and the marketing department and the manufacturing floor and so on. So cultural difference is all around us.
So yeah, you mentioned that you do, the book does emphasize quite a bit on international. I know you have expertise in domestic as well. And oftentimes these tech teams, what we're seeing is a large, diverse, tight groups, actually, you know, whether it's individuals from oftentimes Asian countries of all sorts and nationally as well. And we're seeing oftentimes some offshoring type of situations where we have to work here and over there as well in these odd hours. And there's oftentimes failed projects oftentimes because of miscommunications and things like that. Do you have expertise in this area?
Yes, outsourcing projects are often less productive than they should be as a mm-hmm. result of cultural misunderstanding, because I think a lot of companies don't realize that outsourcing is basically a cost measure. Companies mm-hmm. are taking advantage of low-cost labor. What they don't realize is they're also taking on an international project, an international management project, and they're going to be managing people whom they've never met in some cases who are half a world away. And so mm-hmm. that creates all kinds of difficulties that are difficult to resolve because people don't see each other face-to-face, don't get to know each other, and so on. So cultural problems are an enormous issue for outsourcing.
Right. So a couple of things that I loved about some of your talks and what was in the book was this notion of process versus network-oriented individuals. Can you talk about that?
Okay, sure. And that's a pretty significant problem that you've actually identified, that particular cultural dimension. There are eight cultural dimensions in mm-hmm. my book. Network and process is one of those. And the difference between network and process is huge in teamwork and in management. And process-oriented people, and that's how most Americans are, we tend to focus on working a process, having a detailed schedule and agenda, moving through something in a very orderly manner. And we don't like it very much when the order gets disrupted, when the schedule gets changed, when the agenda isn't met, and so on. In network-oriented countries, people don't necessarily have the infrastructure to have that kind of success working a system. And mm-hmm. they instead they rely on interpersonal relationships. So if I want to get something done, I don't go online and find the form. I call my brother-in-law because he works in the appropriate ministry, and he can give me the scoop on how to get it done faster, and maybe give me some inside information that will help me be more successful in accomplishing that task. And so in that kind of environment, relationships are absolutely crucial. And people are making friends and developing relationships precisely with the understanding that there will be this give and take, and that that I'll do you a favor one day, and next day, guess what? You owe me one. And maybe the favor I ask of you is really big compared to what you asked of me, but hey, that's the deal. And so relationships have a completely different meaning in those countries. And people are used to doing business face-to-face. They work very hard and prioritize the people who are in their social network. And if you don't have a personal relationship with them, you don't get very far with them.
Interesting. Can you talk about the differences between U.S. and Japanese and other international executives or successful types?
What causes someone to be successful in a particular country depends very much on the culture. The culture shapes the way people interact with each other. What the company means, is the company a collection of individuals who show up to get a paycheck and produce a product, or is it more of a family where people are interdependent and spend most of their time with each other at work and after hours and so on? And so what makes a boss successful, what makes a manager successful, is that person supposed to be a parental figure to their employees? Are they supposed to be a friend? Are they supposed to be a coordinator? Are they supposed to be the person who has all the vision that everyone else just carries out? Those roles are significantly influenced by cultural differences in any geography. And by the way, it's not just a country thing. The difference between the North and the South, or a major city center versus a rural area, are huge as well. And my approach is that you figure out the cultural tendencies of the person you're dealing with, rather than using some kind of country profile that lumps everybody in together.
So you, in the book, and you have this notion, or this notion of something called a universalist versus a particularist. Can you explain what those are exactly?
Right. In the book, the term that I use for that particular dimension is rule-oriented people and situation-oriented. Rule followers are the ones who will follow a bad rule because that's what rules are for, and we don't know why that rule was put in place. We had just better follow it. It keeps things stable. It maintains civilization. It's just not a good idea not to follow the rules. Situation-oriented people say, well, some rules are stupid. Some rules are obsolete. Some rules were written by people who did not have my best interest in mind. So I'm going to decide, based on the situation, whether I will follow rules or not. Those people, by the way, each tendency has strengths. So the people who are rule-oriented are very predictable and very reliable. You know what they're going to do, and they're going to pay close attention to, for example, instructions. Particularists or situation-oriented people are very creative. They work around the rules a lot, but they're more creative and they're good troubleshooters. So if you want the best team, it would be good to have someone who's rule-oriented and someone who's situation-oriented on your team because they have complementary strengths and they can work well together. But that's only going to work if you successfully integrate the differences between them.
That's would be the next question. I love the your labeling in the book from going these rule follower versus not rule follower kind of thing. I love that you're bringing it back to sort of a common language, so it's not so academic, if you will. You know, it's much more palatable. So you touch on that. Which role do you think you are?
I'm definitely a rule-oriented person.
Okay,
and and so I've had to learn how to appreciate the value of people who are situation-oriented, like, for example, my
guilty
husband.
Is charged right here, too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me tell you some things about yourself. Do you like to negotiate? Not particularly. Yeah? Well, situation-oriented people tend to be more comfortable with negotiation. My husband's very situation oriented, and he always gets a better price than I do.
I have to take that back. I am, because when we went to Southeast Asia with my wife, I was the one negotiating, and she did not want to. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when I see a price tag, I say, oh well, we can't afford that. Goodbye. My husband says, could you bring it down if we paid cash? What about if we bought two? And he is always
able.
Yes, he's always able to come up with a better deal. So whenever we go into a restaurant and I look around and there's no tables and they tell us it's going to be an hour, he's the one who walks up and says, what about that table in the back? What if this? What if that? And I'll tell you what, 9 times out of 10, he gets a better deal than I do.
Wow. So
that's the value of situation orientation.
Yeah, for sure. And in relationship, I can see how powerful that can be. I know it's difficult to maintain a personal relationship, let alone in the work environment. How are people solving the issue of the friction between those types?
The secret to what I call cultural synergy, which is to get the best of both, is for each person to realize that actually the other one, irritating though they may be at times, has a lot to offer. So in my relationship with my husband, and this would be the same on intercultural teams, I realize that he's the creative one. He's the troubleshooter. He's the problem solver. And I'm the person who's really good at figuring out what needs to happen and making sure it happens and keeping us on track.
Executing.
So as we work together, yes. And I make sure that he's not spiraling out of control with his crazy ideas, and he makes sure that we're not living inside a box because I'm too careful. And it works out great. And that's the and on intercultural teams that I facilitate, that's the beauty of it. When the team realizes that that annoying person actually has this gift to bring the team, then teams really begin to rely on each other, and things become studies actually show that multicultural teams outperform monocultural teams, single culture teams, if they can integrate that difference and realize those synergies.
Fascinating. So which would make, can either be a leader, and which would make the better leader? And I could see in just me saying that and asking the question, it could also depend on the region and what country you're in.
It depends on many, many things.
Right.
Everybody can be a leader.
Good to hear.
We always heard that introverts couldn't be leaders, but now there's a book out talking about introverts and what good leaders they make. Every cultural tendency can be a good leader. And of course, in a country where they're strong to situation tendencies, all the leaders are situation oriented. In a country where there's strong rule tendencies, the leaders tend to be rule oriented, right?
Right.
But what matters is who are you leading and what the environment is. And what are you trying to accomplish in that environment? So you're operating in an environment that has strong rural tendencies. Well, you'd better be aware of that and accommodate that. At the same time, if you're operating in, for example, an emerging economy, if you are working with an outsourcing partner, which usually in an emerging economy, you're dealing with probably a very situation-oriented environment. What you want to be sure to do is to cultivate the good parts of that, while making it clear, once you understand the cultural tendencies, and my book shows you how to do that, once you understand the cultural tendencies that are operating, you can talk about your environment and what's required so that people know the changes they need to make. At the same time, you don't want to squelch their troubleshooting abilities of situation-oriented workforce, right? You want to get the best of those, but you need to make it very clear within what kinds of parameters they're going to be coming up with those creative solutions, and then let them go for it. So a leader needs to be aware of the environment they're operating in and the material they have to work with in terms of their workforce, and then anything is possible.
Wow. So that's a great deal of awareness that's needed to be learned. Now, getting back to the book, you mentioned something called the ARC system that you came up with. Can you elaborate on what that is?
Right. That's just a shorthand for the approach, which is analyze, recognize, and capitalize, ARC. Analyzing involves answering some questions to create your own cultural profile, a little bit like a Myers-Briggs profile, that kind of thing, or a DISC profile, if you're familiar with that system.
Yeah.
And then you can do that for the person that you're working with or the country that you're working in, so that you can identify your tendencies and their tendencies. And then for those 8 dimensions, there are going to be some tendencies probably that are different for the two of you. where you have significant differences, and those are the ones to focus on. I call those the critical dimensions. So if you're the same, if you're both strongly rule-oriented, that dimension's not going to give you any trouble. You don't even need to read about it. But if you are very different for that dimension, then that's one you want to read about. You want to figure out how the other person thinks. So the book tells you, well, if you're one way and the person you're dealing with is the opposite on that spectrum, how do they think? What do they care about? What are their values? What do they worry about? What don't they like about people like you with your tendencies? So you are fully aware then of how you see the world and how they see the world. And then you can begin to look at ways to use the things that they're good at and combine them with the things that you're good at and make sure that you are performing your best in the environment that, that you have.
Well, so can, what is the best way to figure out what the tendencies of someone is and where do they fall along this spectrum? Is it best for the boss to assess the subordinate, or from one person to assess the other, or a team of people to assess the other, or can we assess ourselves?
Yes. So as I said, you can answer a series of questions and create your own profile. And then for doing it for other people, there are three ways. You can ask them to answer the same questions. So if you were a manager of a team, that would be a very good thing to do. When I work with a multicultural team, that's where I start. I have everybody do a cultural profile, and then we map them all onto one chart and look at the spectrum. So then we can say, oh, this person's very quiet and isn't going to give much feedback, and they're going to become silent on this team because we've got such a big talker and such an aggressive personality here. These two people are going to have to work hard to integrate their approach. So we can map all that out. So one way to do it, the easiest way, of course, is to have the other person, your international contact, do a chart, answer those same questions and fill out a profile. Maybe you don't know that person yet. And so in that case, you can go on my website, DeirdreMendez.com, and you can look at the a profile of the country that they come from. Now, as I said, those country profiles are lumping millions of people into one set of categories. That is only a starting point.
Right.
But then when you meet that person, you can say, okay, well, the profile of this country predicted that this person was always going to be late for everything. But they're actually extremely punctual and very organized. I don't think this fits. And then you can modify the profile according to what you've seen in that person. So three methods. One is have them answer the questions. Second method is look at a country profile to get a preliminary idea. Third method, observe them and ask questions.
Well, so what is the difference between cultural awareness and what you teach?
Cultural awareness is the first step in what I teach, but I wrote my book to take the reader beyond cultural awareness. Cultural awareness is very nice, but I can remember sitting through cultural awareness seminars early in my career. And at the end, it's a sort of, I'm okay, you're okay kind of thing. Oh, you're really different from me. And there are good reasons for that. And that's lovely. And you don't really mean to be abrasive or difficult or annoying, but it's just a cultural perception that I have. And everybody's okay and so on. And then you go back to your work environment and you have a problem with this person and you still have no tools for solving them. So my book gives the reader specific culture-based tools for dealing with people from each of the cultural tendencies in the framework. So if I know that you're network-oriented and that relationships are everything to you, and I want to get you to do something, there's a whole chapter on how do I persuade you, given that I don't have that tendency and my persuasive arguments would actually be coming from a very different place. How do I persuade you in terms that mean something to you based on your cultural tendencies? So there's that, there's negotiating, there's how do you hire people, how do you get a job? I want to get a job in Japan. What should I expect? How should I behave? And so on. How do you negotiate? How do you manage an employee or a team of people who have certain tendencies? So all of that is mapped out very clearly. The book is designed to systematize an understanding of culture so that you can take action knowing that you are approaching your counterparts in a culturally appropriate way.
Well, I think you're sitting on the tip of the iceberg here, because there must be a huge demand right now for you. Because I mentioned earlier, you know, with the introduction of all these sort of diversity inclusion, all these diversity the diverse teams that are starting to be integrated within companies, you do often start with this sort of awareness, and often it gets left there. And then I think companies are now becoming more aware that we need solutions much like your book and people like yourself to come in. Are you seeing this trend as well?
Well, thank you. Yes, yes, I am. I'm staying busy, and I'm seeing a huge amount of D&I activity in companies. It's become an enormous, field. And as I said, although I work in the sort of in the international context, it's my approach is equally relevant there as well.
Right. So how do we identify our own biases?
Well, the first thing that you can do is answer the questions in chapter 2 of the book, and you will have you can create your own cultural profile. Where you have strong tendencies, it asks you you create levels for your tendencies. And are you, let's see, you said you were situation oriented. Well, you might be moderately situation oriented. There are people who make it almost a point not to obey rules. Are you one of them? You're probably not one of those.
Kind of, yes. Let's pick on your
My husband, interestingly, is moderately situation oriented. I didn't even know he was situation oriented for years, because situation-oriented people obey the laws that they think are reasonable. So my husband stops at red lights. He thinks that makes sense. There are countries where people don't stop at red lights, you know, if there's nobody coming the other way, right?
Right.
So he has moderate tendencies. And when he fills out the chart, he shows up as moderately situation-oriented. If he were extremely situation-oriented, what that would tell us is that he would be somewhat inflexible about rule following.
I see.
He would find it difficult to work in a highly rule-oriented environment. So wherever you have strong tendencies, you are less likely to have flexibility. And that means that someone who's highly oriented in the opposite direction, highly rule-oriented, you might find annoying. So did you ever have a fifth grade teacher who stuck to the rules and you rolled your eyes a lot? Well, that's that reaction, that's that cultural reaction to somebody who's got the opposite tendency. So by doing the cultural profile, you can identify your own bias, what you prefer. You can also recognize areas where you're going to have more or less resistance to the opposite tendency. If you're right in the middle, all the way down, you're what I call a cultural chameleon. People who have multi-ethnic families sometimes are that way. They're used to both sides of the continuum because their mother is one way and their father is another way, or they've grown up in a very multi-ethnic environment where there are lots of different tendencies operating at the same time. Mm. And they've kind of learned to go with whatever's happening. Mm. And those people are, they are sort of cultural geniuses, and they just pick up on what other people are doing very quickly and modify their approach to be appropriate. And sometimes they don't even know they're doing it. Most of us have a strong tendency here and there. And those are the ones that we have to look out for if we're operating in the opposite kind of environment or with people who have opposite tendencies.
Do you see that as being highly empathetic as well?
Yes, I think that cultural work creates a much more empathetic approach, because once you understand that the person opposite you is operating according to what they've been taught all their lives to do, and that they're not trying to drive you crazy, but rather this is how they've been taught to approach this task. And it's different from your way, but in their environment, it works better. One of the things that it's really important for us to realize is that going into a new environment, the things that we're used to doing aren't necessarily going to work. And we tend to think of our own approach as best. Mm-hmm. So our schedule-oriented people tend to think that they are sort of superior because they stick to the schedule and they know what they're supposed to be doing and they do everything on time. Mm-hmm. Well, if you think that in many emerging economies, the bus leaves when it's full, right?
Wow, yeah.
So what happens to a schedule-oriented person in a situation like that? Wow. They go crazy. That's... they can't count on anything.
Yeah.
There's no benefit to being schedule-oriented.
Right.
What you need in that environment is to have a plan B and a plan C and maybe a plan D. Mm-hmm. because things are not going to happen as planned, right?
Wow.
And so in that environment, people don't take schedules very seriously. They have different ways of accomplishing their goals. It's not because they're bad. It's not because they're lazy. It's because they have a different set of tools.
Right. When you mentioned someone like Brazil, would Brazil be something like that? But it depends where in Brazil.
It does depend where in Brazil. So Brazil overall is extremely flow oriented. That's the opposite of schedule oriented. But I work with teams of Brazilians who come from São Paulo, which is a much more schedule-oriented city than other parts of Brazil. So if you're working with them, you don't have that tension if you're schedule-oriented. Working with people from they call themselves Paulistas, and so it's important to know who you're working with, and again, not to overgeneralize. The way that I explain cultural tendencies is that they are like equipment for a game. So if you went to a basketball game holding a baseball bat and said, hey, I'm ready to play, and everyone looked at you, what would they think? Well, now that's a ridiculous scenario, right? You wouldn't hold a baseball bat up at a basketball game. And yet, when an executive starts, you use the outsourcing example, when you begin to manage a team of people who are overseas, you are, in essence, holding a baseball bat at a basketball game.
Fascinating.
Because the managerial tools, the process tools, and other things that you have are probably not going to be appropriate to that situation. But you won't know that. You won't realize that, and you're going to have to learn it probably the hard way. So, so the benefit of having a systematic approach, my book shows you what to look for, how to recognize those tendencies, and then to understand what they mean, and then how to manage them.
So everyone, we will have links to the book and Deirdre's website in the show notes. So don't worry about that, everyone. If you're driving and listening to this and panicking, trying to write everything down at the same time, don't do that.
Never try to write my name down in traffic. It's unspellable.
So one thing that I found really fascinating was you mentioned predicting problems, and that could be hugely beneficial. How can we predict problems?
Well, if I'm very schedule-oriented and you're very flow-oriented, then I'm probably operating in an environment like the U.S. where schedules are very, very important. If you're flow-oriented, not only do you not perhaps have deadlines as the same level of priority that I do, but also you may have a lot of things in your environment that make it difficult. Maybe you have, during the monsoon season, the road washes out and you can't get to work, or the electricity goes out. You may have the bridge may not may be down, may not open and close or go up and down on the day that you need to get to work. So in your environment, not only do you not prioritize schedules and deadlines the same way, but you may also have impediments to getting things done. It would be really good for me to know that about you. So we could work things in. For example, there could be incentives for early or on-time delivery. There could be penalties in our contract for you to deliver late. In ways to remind you and to motivate you to really make sure that you honor those deadlines that I consider important, that you don't naturally consider important in your own environment.
Wonderful. So Deirdre, I want to be respectful of your time and let everyone know where we can get all the information about you, the book, and everything you're working on. Go forward. And anything else you want to share?
Well, my website is DeirdreMendez.com. That's unspellable. Are you going to have that written somewhere, or
well,
shall I
bet.
Spell it?
Yeah. We'll have that.
Okay. And, all right. And the book is called The Culture Solution. It's available online and in bookstores. And it offers the start to finish, how to use the ARC system. My website, as I mentioned, has a lot of has the country profiles that I described. It also has a lot of extra resources, scenarios, and other things that you can use to practice. It has a practice quiz so that you can see whether you've really mastered the cultural dimensions that are important to you, so that you can be sure that you use them appropriately in the workplace.
This is wonderful. This is a huge tool that everyone should have in their tool belt. I think in any type of vertical, whatever business you're in, this is, I think, a must read and must consideration. For sure.
Thank you so much.
You bet. So everyone, thank you for watching and listening out there. I am Adolfo Ferrando, your host again at NerdStalker on Twitter. Check us out at NerdStalker.com, NerdStalker TV on YouTube, and all the places on iTunes. Please give us a 5-star rating, and we look forward to sharing next time. Thanks for watching and listening, everyone. See you.